Hey!
Hi, this is Dr. Christine.
And Dr. Colin.
And we are your co-hosts for the exciting new podcast called
Love, Scrubs, and Stories,
where we dive deep into the world of dating and relationships and go beyond the people wearing the white coats, the scrubs, and the stethoscopes.
Come join us on this journey where we engage in dialogue and share stories of love, heartbreak, resilience, and triumphs. And we also navigate our professional lives with our hearts on our sleeves.
Please remember to subscribe and hit the notification button to stay up to date on all future episodes.
And we look forward to seeing you inside. Hello, everyone. What's going on? My name is Dr. Colin Zhu, and this is the Love, Scrubs, and Stories podcast. I'm one of the co-hosts for this podcast. My beautiful and well-esteemed, brilliant co-host is out for today, and we can't wait to start the next episode with you guys. Thank you so much for joining in and taking your precious moments to be with us today. If this is your first time, please click on that subscribe and notification button. And this is for single and committed folks delving into relationships and dating topics and through the lens of the healthcare world. So thank you so much for coming on. Guys, we have a wonderful, wonderful guest with us today, and I'm going to introduce her. Her name is Sarah Davison. She's best known as the Divorce Coach. She's a multi-award-winning coach, twice best-selling author and podcast host of Heartbreak to Happiness. She's also a global media commentator for TV and radio for breakups, divorce, and domestic abuse. Following the launch of Sarah's Breakup and Divorce Coach Practitioner Accreditation Programs in 2018, she also founded the International Divorce Coach Center of Excellence, which now has a community of coaches of over 450. Spanning 23 countries and 5 continents. She's a busy woman, and she also has a coaching hub that's a leading global provider of breakup, divorce, and domestic coaching support for businesses of all sizes as part of their employee well-being program. I love it. So without further ado, please welcome Sarah. Hello.
Hi, Matt. Thanks for having me. It's great to see you again.
It's good to see you too. For those of you who don't know, we've met offline in person yes. at a personal and professional development expo. Is probably the best way I can describe it.
Yeah, that's right. That was a few years back now. So yeah, and they're running one in London soon. So I will be at that one. Actually, it's this weekend. So.
Oh, yeah, lovely. Yeah, it was wonderful meeting you and your team, and really, really got to just really shed some light. I'm not a person that has gone through divorce, but I've gone through plenty of heartbreak. And I don't know if it's something that people automatically just go through heartbreak whenever they, you know, let's just say, you know, diverge pathways, or do you feel like it's a certain personality type that just attracts and be able to kind of live through heartbreak, would you say?
I think everybody's different, right? I think there are some people that are probably more prone to being heartbroken than others. Some people cope with it better than others. And some people maybe, I mean, I've got a friend who never really feels the heartbreak. Her attitude is, well, if they don't want me, goodbye, I'm moving on. So, you know, I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? We all cope with any of life's challenges differently, depending on our ability to manage stress, whether, you know, that's huge stress or tiny bits of stress. We've all got friends who can seem to be managing with all sorts of things going off around them, and they're still keeping their head above water and doing what they need to do. And other people, just one tiny thing can send them off the edge and they fall apart and they're in bed for a couple of days. You know, and there's no right or wrong. It's just your ability to manage those kind of life challenges, I guess. But yeah, I mean, some people can perpetuate the being stuck in heartbreak very, very well by telling everybody what's going on and updating their hairdresser and their friends, their family, maybe the person at the shop where they are. You know, everyone needs to know the next episode and installment of what's going on in their breakup. Whereas other people tend to not focus so much on that and throw themselves into moving forward and doing things that are going to move themselves out of that pain into the next phase of their life and potentially another relationship. So yeah, like you say, everybody is different, right?
Yeah, for sure. So for those that don't know you, can you briefly, you've gone through, we went through your introduction and you have built something so massive. And in a way, when I first met you, you told me that it was very interesting how no one really kind of carved out this specific space and niche for themselves. And yet it is something that we all go through, right? And in America, I believe the rates are, you know, 50% more or less. And my understanding of the percentages after you get remarried and thrice over remarried, that it actually increases. It just goes up and up more. So really briefly for the audience, how did you come to find, you know, yourself in this spot? You know, did you have another career that was similar, that kind of, you know, that painted that, you know, through line? How did you get to the spot?
That's a good question, Connor. I mean, the divorce coach isn't the most catchy of job titles, is it really? But I mean, I literally fell into this. I have been coaching, and I'm a massive self-help personal development geek. I mean, I've been studying it, immersing myself in it straight out of university. It was my whole world, to be honest. I found something that really interested me because I wasn't particularly bright at school or particularly popular. And I didn't think I'd really amount to much, but I stumbled across an Anthony Robbins seminar when I was in my late teens, and it completely took the blinkers off and sort of told me for the first time, well, actually, you can be who you want to be. You can create the future you want to have. And I thought, well, if that's true, let's give it a go. So that actually changed the trajectory and got me really interested in self-help and personal development. But it was when I went through my own divorce that I realized that there was no help for my specific scenario. I mean, I found out overnight that my husband not only no longer wanted to be married to me, but he was also madly in love with someone else. And a few weeks later, I found out that she was pregnant. And our son was only one. We worked together. We had nearly 200 staff, an office in London, office in Sydney, Australia. So it was a huge shift to my entire world to find myself, you know, not with the father of my son, a single mum, and, you know, not knowing what the future held because I wasn't going to stay in that business with him. So even though it was a joint business, we had to separate that out. So I fell into it because I was looking for help for myself to pick myself up off the bathroom floor and stop all that ugly crying so I could move forward. But there wasn't any help. And like you say, there's help for everything else, like giving up smoking, losing weight, you know, all those things. But there was nothing specifically for heartbreak other than therapy, obviously. But that isn't what I was used to. I'm a coach. So I wanted a group maybe to join or some quick tools to dial down those negative emotions. But because there wasn't anything, that's when I combined my coaching experience with the divorce process and created the tools, which are the tools now I share with people all over the world. So yeah, that's kind of how I got into it.
Well, I, you know, as a healthcare practitioner, I think one of our best tools is really about living and leading by example. There's nothing else that I could demonstrate. If you can't show, it's kind of like show and tell growing up. And if you can't demonstrate it, it's not like we wanted to get divorced and then demonstrate. It's like, here's my example. Why don't you follow it? Right. It's not really about that. It's more, you know, once you have that lived experience, there's something in you that goes to this experience and propels you to say, hey, I could either learn from it and continue to not, you know, make mistakes and missteps and make sure I get back on a healthier pathway, or I could teach someone else and say myself, okay, how can I prevent others or give someone else the tools and strategies so I can minimize their suffering, right? You mentioned about picking yourself off the bathroom floor, ugly face crying, you know, things like that. Heartbreak sucks, right? Heartbreak, call it what it is. It just sucks.
It doesn't actually feels like a real physical pain, which is crazy because it's not a real physical pain. So, I mean, heartbreak is horrendous. And that's one of the challenges that, you know, people want to move through that as quickly as possible. But if they don't know how, then you can get stuck. And if you get stuck, you know, some companies now in the UK, and I know in the US that you're always ahead of us over here, but they give time off for breakups and divorce. But the challenge I have with that is, you know, if you let people have a week off for heartbreak, I can tell you what happens because I see it. They stay at home and they get in their bed and they don't get out and they eat all the wrong kind of food and they get more and more depressed and that's all they're thinking about. And if you're focusing on the negativity, that's all you're going to see. And then it becomes at the end of that week off so much harder to go back to work. So a lot of people say, I can't do this. So again, if you don't get the right support, because there are tools that are going to help you speed that up, but it's not without you committing and stepping up and taking some action. Even small action can make a big difference. So it's really about looking for the help and getting the help and not getting sucked into that cycle of feeling sorry for yourself, which I know is normal. But if you do that, it's going to take you a little bit longer to get through it.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's get into the nitty gritty. Tell me objectively, what is the number one top reason why people diverge, get through divorce, break up, relationships, you know, just don't happen anymore? And then from your lens, having gone through what you've gone through and the experiences and coaching so many different clients and coaching other coaches, what are the trends? What is the top trend for people that seem to kind of get into of this repeating pattern that gets them from one relationship to another relationship to another relationship?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And there's so many reasons why people break up. You know, there's adultery, they just grow apart, you know, the kids leave, money problems. I mean, all those things are issues, but it really boils down to, if I could put it into one word, it's communication. And I think if there are problems in your relationship and you don't address them, and that can be for lots of reasons, but if you don't address them, it festers. And something that festers builds up over time. So it could even be the smallest thing that is the straw that breaks the camel's back. But it actually is relating to all what I call stacking over the months and maybe years that you've stayed with someone where you're not addressing issues. Now, a lot of people will say, well, I don't like arguments, I don't like conflict, so I walk away from it. Well, that's one perspective, and I totally understand that. We're not encouraging people to get stuck into some sort of hearty argument. But what I am encouraging is people to talk about issues as they come up. But in order to do that, you need to be able to create a safe space with your partner to say, at the beginning of your relationship, as things start to happen, you can say, look, you know, I just want to be able to communicate with you in a way that if something comes up that irritates me, frustrates me, is difficult for me, or really just outright drives me crazy, I need to be able to say to you, look, you know, is this your intention when you do this? It makes me feel like this. Are you meaning to cause this kind of reaction from me or this feeling, or, you know, explain? And that means that person can go, oh my goodness, I had no idea me dropping my trousers on the floor was causing so much tension for you, or the fact that I don't kiss you when I come in every night is making you feel unloved. Because we all have different ways of expressing our love. We all have different ways of communicating how we feel. And just because someone's doing something doesn't mean that they're doing it to upset you. It could mean that they just don't think that way. You know, they're not you not doing it, they're them not doing it. And it might be something that doesn't come natural to them. I've got a client at the moment whose husband is really not one for signs of affection. And she really craves that. In fact, it's one of her number one languages of love, that physical touch. But he never had that as a child. He can't remember his parents hugging him or telling him even that they loved him. So those two things about vocalizing and hugging, showing love by a little, like holding her hand or anything like that, doesn't come naturally to him. He loves her so much. He just doesn't communicate it that way. His way is to do little acts of service around the house or make sure that she has the right food in the house on a Sunday morning. He always does the food shop for her. He walks the dog. He cleans the car. He does all those things, which is his way. To her, that doesn't mean anything. She's like, well, of course you do that. You're in a relationship with me. That's expected. So you can see how the communication, if it breaks down and you're not saying, I need a bit more of this, or do you understand that your actions are causing me to feel like this? Those have ripple effects on the relationship. So communication in the moment to address it, or not even in the moment, finding a time that is suitable, that is calm, that you can have those discussions, that will lead to a healthy relationship where over time, if problems come up, you can work together to solve them. So I think that's probably the communication for me is probably the big thing there.
So communication, you know, I've definitely heard this tons of times, and communication, not just romantically, but also everywhere, right?
Yeah,
familial, coworkers, platonic. And personally for me, after COVID, I realized that if you don't make intention or give space, like you said, space and attention to a two-way relationship. That's how I see a relationship, is a two-way street. And if that's not reciprocated back, it becomes a lot harder. And it's really about, you know, both ways and the act of wanting to nurture it, wanting to cultivate. It's like gardening. I like, in terms of relationships, I find gardening to be really good analogies because you have to tend to it. You have to give it love. You have to feed it the right, you know, nutrients and ingredients. So going back to communication, would you say even before getting into a relationship, let's just say we're just by ourselves and we're single, are there ways that you've learned over time or cultivated with your clients to promote healthy communication just with themselves first before they get into a relationship? Is that something that you go into?
Yeah. Well, I think it's really important to understand your preferred method of communication. So whether, you know, looking at your languages of love obviously are important. The way you resolve conflict is also another one. It might be that you avoid conflict so much because as a child, maybe you learned that actually speaking out didn't serve you because you got shouted at and shut down, or it made you feel uncomfortable. So you just learn not to really voice anything and so shut down and never really face it. It might be that you grew up in an environment where you serve your family, you were always like shouting it out, figuring it out, and never go to bed on an argument. You know, we all have different ways that we've learned from our backgrounds, our childhoods, of how to do things or how definitely not to do things. So a lot of our strategies for resolving conflict, or the way we communicate how we feel about somebody, the how we express our emotions and feelings, or whether we do or we don't, comes from learned strategies unconsciously. So an exercise to do is to actually go back and have a look at how you resolve conflict. And it doesn't mean that you're right and everybody else is wrong, by the way, although it's crazy to think that. It's just the way that you do it. And you can be flexible with that, or at least understanding when you meet somebody that they have a different way of resolving it. If you're aware of that consciously, it enables you to go, ah, okay, well, I like to shut down and maybe leave the room and come back the next day and talk about it. But this new person seems to want to stay in the room and talk to me about it. Now I'm finding that a bit disrespectful, making it feel like I'm unloved, but maybe they don't mean it like that. Maybe that's the way they show love, to stay in the room and resolve it. So again, it's looking at having the ability to have that perspective to see things from other people's point of view and why they might be doing it. Now that doesn't mean that we can excuse bad behavior or toxic or unhealthy behaviors, absolutely not. But it's about being consciously aware that the way you do it is the way you've learned to do it. It doesn't necessarily mean it's the only way or even the best way to resolve it, although it might be, but just being flexible to work with somebody else and be able to say, oh, I see that we resolve things slightly differently. How can we come to a way that enables both of us to feel heard and to feel loved? And then you can have those discussions. But understanding that before you get into a relationship is a really healthy way of going about it.
Yeah, I was about to ask, you know, is this something that, I guess it's hard to say, what is that upper threshold of knowing, okay, I'm good. I'm, you know, I feel like I've solid, healthy communication within myself and with others. Let me decide to move forward with a relationship, right? Like, what is that health? What is that threshold of saying, okay, you know, before I jumped into something, you know, am I good with myself? Because it sounds like it's just logical to making sure that you have that self-talk, making sure that you communicate with others, understanding. It's almost like processing, you know, processing some trauma that you have not, you know, have had chance to process before you jump into something else. Would you say that it's important to make sure to develop yourself as much as possible before you jump into something else?
Well, yeah, I mean, ideally, absolutely. But I think the key is to not look to somebody else to fix the gaps in you. You know, nobody wants somebody that's needy or clingy. And if you are that way, then, you know, it would really help you and be empowering for you to look at the areas that you feel you need that support in and understand why that is. Why do you need someone to be around you all the time? And what else can you put into a relationship that means that you don't need that so much? Maybe that might be you're having a selection of other friends. It's interesting, isn't it? We look for our partner to literally be able to do and support us in every area of our life, to talk to us about work, to talk to us about the kids, to be able to take the rubbish out and put the shelves up, but also to be a great intimate partner with and be totally romantic and then buy us flowers or take us for dinner or whatever it is. Yeah, that's pretty much everything. But if you said to your best friend, right, you're going to be my one and only friend, and I need you to support me in every area of my life, they're going to have a meltdown, because we just don't do that, right? We're not designed that way to be one thing for that entire person. And everybody's going to have their strengths and weaknesses. Probably with a romantic partner, you want to keep the intimacy bit with that person. But the other things you could probably outsource to other people to be able to say, look, you know what? I want to talk about work. I don't think you're really on the same wavelength as me. So yes, I can talk to you about it to an extent. I'm not going to resent you or get frustrated with you when we can't have those discussions, because I can go to this friend. Or if I want to talk about childcare or something like that, I'm going to go to this friend because she's got six kids, or he's a dad of three kids. He understands this. So I'm going to go to him because my wife isn't always the best person to speak to about this. So again, depending on, you know, this can work in any style of relationship, but not putting it all on your partner. Very, very important. Yeah. So I think if you can think these things through, self-love is important. Like, you want to be able to be happy in your own skin, and a partner is a bonus, ideally, than needing to be with someone out of fear of being on your own. Because you take all that with you into that relationship, it's going to put pressure on it. Now, it can work as long as you're open and you can talk about these things with your partner. But if you can't and you're taking that in, there's going to be a few challenges along the way.
The Loves, Girls, and Stories podcast is a collaboration and co-production between The Chef Doc and White Coat Romance.
The Chef Doc is a wellness platform that offers innovative approaches to thriving and offers a self-empowerment book, podcast series, on-demand masterclass series, as well as a brand new app. The app provides self-guided education such as food as medicine, self-care, and resilience. Coaching services are also available, whether you prefer one-on-one or group type settings. Please go now to your app store, as well as Apple as Google Play, to download for free.
White Coat Romance is a dating app for healthcare and health-related professionals and students in the U.S. and Canada. It's a lively space where you can find love, companionship, and build meaningful connections with like-minded professionals. If you're single, go to the App Store and Google Play to download and join our vibrant community.
We are deeply grateful for your support. From all of us here at Love, Scrubs, and Stories podcast, thank you so much for choosing us.
And enjoy the rest of this episode.
I feel like when I think about my grandparents' generation, and I guess it's going to be different from depending on what culture you come from, but I feel like just in general, two generations ago, we didn't have this perception of all these different hats our partner needed to wear or to expect them to wear. And it seemingly, it almost happened in two generations where our partner has to be everything and everyone and every role. And that's a lot for anyone. I think about, you know, you mentioned about, you know, visiting New York and all that. And right across from the Rockefeller is the Atlas statue, right? The entire world that Atlas is holding. So in a way, the partner is holding that world and that loads of burden. I don't know what happened. How did we go from just seemingly in two generations to be able to shift that kind of perspective? Do you have any insight into that? Is the internet, how did that happen?
I think it was that way. I just think maybe it wasn't talked about as much. I mean, I do think that, yeah, marriage was for life back then, and, you know, getting separated, divorced, yeah, that wasn't really a thing so much. If you go back to our grandparents' generation and beyond that, they were together for life, no matter what. So they were sort of, if they were unhappy, they stayed unhappy. You know, there wasn't much they could do about it. So I think it probably always has been that way. But I think now we're much more open to talking about our feelings. I think the divorce rate is much higher because we live in a disposable culture. We live in a society where if you don't like something, you change it. So, you know, how many mobile phones have you had in the last 3 years? How many jackets, coats? You know, how many pairs of trainers? Yeah. You know, people get through things so, so quickly. We're not attached to things. We don't. But even, you know, you can see with the commitment to work, people change jobs a lot more. There's not the same consistency. And if you're with something, you make it work. And again, that's the same with relationships. Sometimes, you know, obviously we live in a very celebrity-driven culture. And what the general public doesn't tend to see is the heartbreak and the tears behind the scenes when a relationship ends, tend to sort of fast forward to the new partner and them looking happy again and getting married again. And, you know, and I think sometimes we think, oh, well, it's easy. You come out of one and you bounce back. And there are the tears, there is the pain. We just don't see that bit. That's not in the magazines or on social media very often. Sometimes it is, but not very often. So again, I think we've just got to be careful and think through things a little bit more carefully. The grass isn't always greener, but it might be. If you're in an unhappy relationship, then it's more okay to leave it now than it ever was. So there's two sides. There is a positive, but also I think there's the temptation just to ditch something without doing the work. And the research shows that if you do work at things by communicating and having those difficult conversations, then actually you can create something that's really solid, that where you're really bonded and you really understand each other. So if you do have a bad day, you're not thinking, oh, can't deal with this, I'm off. You're thinking, right, they need a bit of help. I need to be more flexible. How can we meet in the middle? And that builds a relationship and a strength that can last a lifetime. And those relationships tend to last a lot longer.
Yeah. I think of when you were going through how we just change through things really quickly, it, in a way, what that means essentially is that that person is devalued, right? And they're just seen as a commodity, right? And that's the age that we live in, especially with online dating the way it is.
Yeah.
It's the paradox of choice and feeling and thinking and being conditioned that the grass is always greener. So you're never really putting in the work. You're not, never really putting in the time and the attention to cultivate something, to nurture something, right? To really see it through and through, right? Let's just say someone has gone through a divorce, right? Is there something that top tips in terms of what do I need to prepare myself before jumping into another relationship or possible, potentially another marriage? Do you guide your clients through that?
Yes, we do. So, I mean, it's really important that you do the work. And I think that starts with learning the lessons from your past relationship and banking them, so you're not repeating the same mistakes again, like unconsciously attracting the same type of partner that doesn't work with you. Then that's because as human beings, we know what we want, right? We go out and go, oh, yes, I'm attracted to this type of person, this color hair, this height, and all those things, which physically it's easy to find out and figure out. We know what we're attracted to. But what do you need from a partner? That's very different from what you want. What do you need for it to be successful? Do you need somebody who values health and fitness? Do you need somebody who is great with your kid? Do you need someone who's emotionally intelligent? Do you need someone who's loyal? Do you need someone who's kind? What is it you need? Focus on that, because a lot of the time we put too much attention on things like people's hobbies and people's looks and their money, their financial situation. Do they have a similar personality? All those things have a role, absolutely. But the key things are things like kindness and loyalty, or respect, emotional stability, the ability to make those difficult decisions together and fight well and resolve conflict well. You know, and also how you feel about them. What side of you are they bringing out? These things are, I think, very much undervalued at the beginning of relationships, but actually are the key. When the relationships really work, you tend to find that those things are in place, and the brown hair, blue eyes, height, and you know where they live, how much money they have, is it kind of comes in second. So again, I think it's about really getting real about what you want and also what you need. And then, you know, being open-minded. I think a lot of people tend to go for the same type of person, thinking, oh, well, this is what I like. But if you've never tried a slightly different personality or gone outside your local area, you know, again, the world's a big place, right? So I think just being open-minded, willing to try something that maybe you didn't think you might like, but you might be surprised. And starting to say yes more when you're within your own boundaries, obviously, but when you're out there and you're single and you get opportunities, you want to come out to this thing, or should we go and join this club, or just start saying yes rather than wanting to hide away from the world, because you need to get back out there. I don't know about you, but the only person that rings my doorbell is the post lady, and yeah, it's not my bag. So you have to go out, right? You have to get out of your house.
That's true. For me, I said to myself, online dating can only go so far, right? And now that we have artificial intelligence, it becomes more complex and complicated. Yeah. And I totally agree with you. I'm more of a person that thrives with in-person connection. So throwing yourself out there, putting yourself out there, because there's a lot of nonverbal cues you can't really pick up when you're doing things on screen or virtually. You need those cues to be able to get a good sense. And depending on how intuitive you are, how much of a sense you've cultivated for yourself in terms of, okay, what am I exactly, you know, attracted to, or what is exactly compatible if I don't really get the whole picture? And I feel that online dating is very limited because it doesn't give you the whole picture. So, but of course, everyone online dates.
Yeah, but it's a really good point now, because whether you're online dating or not, it's shifted away from the body language that you and I maybe grew up with, whereas, you know, are they tilting their head? Are they, you know, looking at me a certain way? Are they licking their lips? All those sort of, like, you know, leaning in when I'm talking, those kind of things. Now it's digital body language. Like, oh, how long did they wait to read my message? Did they put a kiss at the end? You know, what emojis did they use? How fast did they respond? Did they ask you a question, or are they just short answers answering the question?
Did they leave me on read?
Yeah, exactly. Leave me on read, the biggest insult. But it's like, oh, wow. Okay. So, you know, now we're sort of going to that kind of body language, digital body language, which is very difficult unless you know somebody to be able to pick up on. You know, body language, the real body language that you and I grew up on, you know, you get a much more of a feel for somebody when you're in front of them, whereas a lot of it depends on your insecurities, where you're at personally, how quickly you would respond, what that means to you. Doesn't mean the same thing to them. You don't know what's going on in their world. So again, it can be extremely stressful trying to see the world through that lens. So definitely, if you can get out and about, that is probably a much healthier way of doing it.
Yeah, for sure. A question more pointed for our audience, and our audience represents the diversity and landscape of the healthcare world. Have you coached healthcare professionals before, and have you seen a trend among them that tends to not really go towards, you know, a healthier relationship, you know, pattern? Are there certain characteristics and qualities that tend to follow and encompass a healthcare professional that tends to lead them off the edge?
Well, I think there's two things. I mean, I tend to see people going through breakups and heartbreaks. So I'm quite a biased selection. So the people I see have usually broken up, and that's usually down to, you know, I mean, a whole range of things, but I do think doing shift work is very long hours, again, can put pressure on any relationship. So I think that can be very difficult. But also, healthcare workers tend to be highly empathetic. If you're highly empathetic, you are more likely to attract a toxic partner because you're more easily manipulated than someone that says, nah, I don't like that, sling your hook. Now, as a general rule, I'm highly empathetic, and that's why I ended up in several toxic relationships. So again, that can be a bit of a trait as well. If you're always about fixing people, caring for people, understanding why that might have happened and coming up with solutions, you might find that you are a bit like a moth. You see that you're a bit like a flame for the moths and they're coming at you. So if that is the case, just be aware of it consciously and hone your radar to spot the signs of what an abusive partner will be, because it will feel pretty incredible at the beginning because it's designed to lure you in. If they showed up as they are on the last day of the relationship, you would sling your hook and never get in. So that's kind of a toxic cycle. So I would just be aware of that, because that caring attitude will attract people that want to manipulate that. But yeah, I mean, I think, again, it all comes down to, if you take the unhealthy relationships out of it, just that good communication. Like, if you can't spend quality time with people because of your work schedule, or you get called off, you know, to something straight away and you had planned something, it's about communicating that you still, you know, love that person, you respect them. It's not that you're being difficult. You make sure that they're reassured, rather than thinking they don't understand, this is my job. So again, it might just take a little different conversation, a little bit more time and understanding with that to communicate in a different way. So those are things that I've seen.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, Sara, thank you so much for being here on the show. I know that you travel around the world, really, really just being a beacon of just promoting. At the end of the day, it's really about promoting healthier relationships and healthier self-love for yourself at the end of the day. We're just simply doing it with another person, right? So I appreciate you doing that. And as always, it's wonderful to see you again. What can you share with the audience? What are you currently working on? Please let us know how someone can find you.
Yeah, so my Instagram, I'm always putting free videos and information and tips and advice on there. So that's a great resource. It's Sarah Davison Divorce Coach. So Sarah, S-A-R-A, Davison, D-A-V-I-S-O-N, Divorce Coach on Instagram. My website is sarahdavison.com. And we have all sorts of online support groups, which we just have people from all over the world on those. So you can meet like-minded people, find your tribe, get advice from my accredited coaches who are running those sessions. Also one-to-one coaching with an action plan at the end of each session if you need more tailored advice. Or if you wanted to train to become a coach, we have my training school. So a lot of people who are going through heartbreak find that a way that they heal and then give back is to train as a breakup and divorce coach as well. So we do lots of things. We also have a toxic relationship recovery retreat coming up, which is online as well. So that's all on the website and social media too.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, that sounds like a lot of great value and a lot of great options and choices, depending on where you are in terms of your journey through love. So Sarah, thank you so much for coming on to the show. We really appreciate your work and expertise. Guys, thank you so much for watching this episode. If you like this, please like, comment, and subscribe. And if you feel like this is a benefit for someone else, please let them know. And until then, please say goodbye to Sarah. Bye.
Thank you, guys. Bye.
Hey guys, thank you so much for watching and listening to this channel. If you enjoyed this, please like, comment, and subscribe. And if you felt like this was a benefit for someone else, please let them know as well.
As a reminder, this channel does not offer medical advice. All opinions expressed are ours and our guests only. It is for general informational purposes only and does not replace professional healthcare services. Please consult your own healthcare provider for any medical issues you may have.
Until the next episode, whether you're in and out of your scrubs,
please remember to love yourself and others and lead with kindness.
Bye. Bye.